This week has been marked by death and violence that seems to have been a response to those who were different. The shootings last Sunday were targeted at the lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender community, a response of one man's anger to having witnessed a gay kiss. One man's anger highlighting the discomfort that some still feel about those who are different to them. Perhaps it could be said that there are those who are afraid of the LGBT community because they don't fit with how they feel society should be structured or how people should relate to one another. With the shock of 49 deaths still in the air, the news of the MP Joe Cox's attack and death at the hand of someone touting a right-wing political perspective briefly quietened the referendum campaign. A woman who, from all reports, was invested in her community and prepared to meet with those from all political views in the active engagement in her role as MP, found herself the target of someone's fear and hatred. Her husband, through his grief, urged others to fight the hatred that killed her. Both events are tragic, and in recent days many prayers have been said as we long for comfort and peace for those who have been hurt and bereaved. Both events have happened in the midst of contentious political campaigns where fear of those who are different is used as voting capital. Within hours of the shooting in Orlando, one campaign was highlighting that the gunman was potentially an ISIS sympathiser, that under a different political regime, they come from a community that would not easily be welcomed into the USA. Rather than noticing the continuing subtle and unsubtle discrimination of the LGBT community, a different fear was enhanced and division further wounded. For the United Kingdom, Joe Cox's death highlighted the extremes of part of the referendum campaign. I'm afraid I can't be anything but biased in how I talk about this, for there is part of the campaign that stinks of a Johnny Foreigner attitude. We're to notice differences rather than welcome our similarities. Polly Toynbee, writing in The Guardian on Friday, said, "Did we delude ourselves we were a tolerant country, or can we still save our better selves? Over recent years, struggling to identify Britishness, to connect with a natural patriotic love of country that citizens have every right to feel, politicians floundering for a British identity reach for the reassuring idea that this cradle of democracy is blessed with some special civility." Our gospel reading this morning focuses on the kind of fear that excludes and diminishes the humanity of others. It's a difficult encounter with Jesus to know where to begin. The story before this one tells of the calming of the storm, and in that story, the disciples have witnessed the power that Jesus has over creation. Knowing that Jesus can calm storms, they head back out in their boat to the Gerasenes. This was a region on the eastern side of the Lake Galilee, where the citizens are thought to have been more Greek than of Jewish descent. As Jesus steps onto the shore, he meets a naked, demon-possessed man who lives amongst the tomb. The man or the demon recognizes Jesus, and knowing that Jesus has the power to cast out demons, asks not to be tortured. Jesus asks the name of the demon, to which the response is legion. This name reveals information about the power and effect that the possession has on the man, for it invites the hearer to think about a Roman legion, which consisted of 6,000 men. It also invites the hearer to understand the demonic forces as a highly disciplined, organized force rather than a chaotic power. Casting out the demons, Jesus gives them permission to find their way amongst a herd of pigs, and the pigs then throw themselves into the water and drown. Nancy Rockwell, in an article on the text, suggests that this is the animal's response to the unclean spirit in their midst. And she writes, "The pigs, an unclean animal in Jewish understanding, will not abide being unclean in their spirits and immediately hurl themselves into the sea, preferring death to a cursed life. This is not the first biblical tale in which the spiritual life of animals is shown to be purer than that of human beings. The dove on the ark brings Noah a God sign of hope, the olive branch, a sign of the end of anxiety for the world. Balaam's donkey can see the angel Balaam cannot see and honours it, despite Balaam's whipping. In the long persuasion of Jonah, God reminds him that the love of God is for the cattle of Nineveh, as well as for the people there." Returning to our story, those who were tending the pigs run off into the town and tell others what's happened. With the implications of a financial loss to the community hurry to see Jesus and find the man that they had been excluding now well and dressed. Rather than focusing on the transformation of the man, they're instead afraid of Jesus, perhaps afraid of what further costs will come their way if they allow Jesus to stay. The healed man wants to follow Jesus, but Jesus leaves him with an instruction to tell the story of God's action in his life. The gospel tells the story of Jesus' power over demons with an exorcism on the side. It's not the exorcism that should be our focus as we consider the events. First of all, I want you to think about the community before and after the healing of the man. Prior to the healing, we're maybe wondering, where is the community? The man's living alone, away from others, amongst the tombs. There are signs that at some time there's been an involvement with the community, a time when they had ensured his segregation from the whole. We're told that he's chained and guarded, but that his demons are so strong that he'd broken his chains and been driven by the demon to a solitary place. I think the name Legion perhaps also suggests that there's an almost controlled, consistent abuse of the man by the community. Afraid of him, the community had sought to control him, and when they could not, they allowed for exclusion. There's no offer of love. No offer of help. After the healing, we meet the crowd who are afraid again and unwilling to welcome Jesus. They don't rejoice in the well-being of one of the community, but instead mourn the loss of wealth. Now think about Jesus within the story. The way the story is told, it's almost as though Jesus' only reason for going to the Gerasenes is to meet this man. And in order to meet him, Jesus goes to a Gentile area where they keep and breed pigs, an unclean animal within Jewish tradition. We're told that the spirit is unclean, and so Jesus again breaks Jewish custom by engaging in dialogue with such a spirit. And finally, Jesus meets the man amongst the tomb. He's walking amongst the dead, again against Jewish custom, and makes him unclean. This gospel story is a story of inclusion and mercy, telling of a God who will go to any measures that others might now know the embrace of God's love. It's a living out of what the prophet writes in the passage we heard from Isaiah. "I was ready to be sought out by those who did not ask, to be found by those who did not seek me. I said, here I am, to a nation that did not call on my name. I held out my hands all day long to a rebellious people who walk in a way that's not good, following their own devices." David Lewes writes, "There's no place on earth that is God forsaken. Moreover, and more importantly, there's no person that is God forsaken. Unclean, outcast, abandoned, unpopular, incarcerated, unbeliever. No one is left out. There are no conditions to be met to receive God's love. You don't have to be wealthy or poor. You don't have to be from one ethnic group or another. You don't have to have believed your whole life or come to faith only recently or have any faith at all. Jesus seeks out everyone." As God seeks us out, he asks us to notice those who've been pushed to the margins, those who are considered unclean. Will we be like the people of the region of the Gerasenes and see the inclusion of those who are different as diminishing of our livelihood and well-being? Or will we recognise that we diminish the humanity of others when we focus on their difference and not our shared purpose? I'm sure some of you will have seen the film Chocolat, which tells the story of a community that seeks to exclude those who are different and puts customs and religious practice before relationships. It's the outsiders who reveal what it means to value relationships with those that live around. An unmarried mother arrives in a small French town and opens a chocolate shop at the beginning of Lent. And she finds herself in opposition to the mayor and others who boycott her shop and getting to know her. She, however, befriends her landlady, who's not been allowed to see her grandson, and the river gypsies, who are feared by the locals. While the locals exclude, the outsiders remind them of what it means to love. It's the words from the priest's Easter sermon I want to finish with. Stumbling words that suggest that even Père Henri, the priest, has had his prejudices challenged. Stumbling words that invite us to notice ours. I want to talk about Christ's humanity. I mean how he lived his life on earth, his kindness, his tolerance. We must measure our goodness not by what we don't do, what we deny ourselves, what we resist, or who we exclude. Instead, we should measure ourselves by what we embrace, what we create, and who we include. Amen.